Welcome to IntelliCast, powered by Skip.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Good afternoon. Not sure where you're joining us from. I'd like to welcome you all to our AMA, or Ask Me Anything. As we continue to do our series of these, we are actually very excited to have Zena Applebaum, the National Director of Market Insights and Engagement at Thomson Reuters, as our in-house expert today. For those of you that are not familiar with the process of an AMA, this is basically a really quick-hitting 30-minute session, and the content actually has been driven by you. When you registered, we asked you to submit 1 to 2 questions on today's topic, which is women in CI. Very quickly, before we get started, I'd like to just run through how today's program will flow. First and foremost, please remember this is a live program and your computer will stream both the audio and the video. And so please ensure that your audio and video are on your computer. All participants will be muted during the duration of this 30-minute program. Questions that were submitted during the registration process, we'll get to as many of those as we can first. And as time permits, we will actually take some questions. You can type those in on the chat and we'll get to those as many as we can. And last but not least, we don't foresee technical issues, but the internet can sometimes be an issue. So if that happens, we will contact you regarding your scheduling. So let's get started. Folks, I'd like to introduce you to Zena Applebaum. Zena, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for inviting me. Happy to be here. So I'll just take it away.
Yes, ma'am. All you.
Okay, perfect. So Zena Applebaum, I'm happy to be here today. And I thought I'd give a little bit of background about me prior to getting started. I've been a competitive intelligence practitioner for the better part of 20 years. In 2015, I was made a fellow of the CI fellows as well. And I think, you know, it's very interesting when you talk about women in CI, one of the things that's come up is questions around, is it really that different for women, or how many women are in CI? I feel like there's a ton of women in CI. And I think we'll get to it in a little bit, but I think it's important to remember that while women are continually pushing the envelope and doing more and more, the numbers don't reflect at a high level sort of the impact that women have on the corporate world in general, and even in the not-for-profit sector as well when we talk about competitive intelligence. So, like I said, I've been doing CI for about 20 years, fell into it as many other people I know have as well. It's not something a lot of people set out to do. And competitive intelligence still struggles with whether or not it is a bona fide profession or a series of competencies that you can learn and that you can string together to create sort of a discipline within a discipline. And we know that competitive intelligence gets passed around from department to department. Sometimes you report in through marketing, sometimes in through strategy, sometimes through R&D. I've even heard of people reporting in through finance. And so I think when that competitive intelligence struggle as a discipline exists within borders or within borders of organizations, it makes it harder as a woman to figure out where you fit in and how you can matriculate through any system as well. And that's just, I think part of the competitive intelligence needing to find itself and then women needing to find themselves within competitive intelligence. I wanted to share a couple of statistics with you and also just get rid of my giant face on the screen. So, you know, some of the questions are, is it really that different for women? And the reality is that while competitive intelligence itself may not be specifically different for women, everything is different for women. And it's different for women because we live in a world that traditionally has seen men in the corporate space. And when women try to enter that corporate space, we are up against different challenges. Psychology research has found time and time again that women tend to be more communicative, that women tend to be more communal, and that they exhibit more compassion and caring. And I think that's really important for one of the questions that came in that we're going to talk about a little bit later. And you may read that and say, well, that's sexist. Men can be compassionate and caring too. And of course, men can be compassionate and caring too. And none of the things we're going to talk about today are necessarily exclusively for women. but they are more about our perceptions. They're more about our bias. And we know that competitive intelligence, at least from a theoretical point of view, we attempt to remove the bias. We attempt to remove the bias in the way that we treat people. We attempt to remove the bias in the way that we read data, whether it's human intelligence data or statistical data. We try to remove that bias. And it's hard to remove that bias when we're talking about people. So that's something I want you to think about too. Implicit bias, bias that we have by nature of where we fit into the world socioeconomically, from a all of the different things that make us who we are, with that comes bias. And it's very hard to remove those biases when you're dealing with people. And that's one of the things that is a challenge, I think, today in the workplace more than in other places. Women are indeed more people-oriented and spend more time developing and coaching other leaders in their organization. And these are all things that I can show you the statistics that back up all of these things. There is empirical evidence that goes with these things. But where that leads is that for every 100 men that are promoted and hired to manager, only 72 women are promoted and hired. And the disparity means that over time, men end up holding 62% of manager level positions, while women hold only about 38%. And currently, when you look at the largest corporations in 2019 across the globe, women occupy 29% of C-suite positions. So that means that the bulk of it is actually held by not women. And when you look at the statistics in the US, women make up over 50% of the population. It's not quite 51%, but it is higher than 50. And so, you know, when you think about men and women being different, and they are, I mean, I don't know that anybody on this call would disagree that we're not, we are different, but different doesn't have to mean not equal. I had the privilege of growing up in a home with an older brother, and I never felt a difference in the way we were treated. I never felt a difference in our experiences and things that we were afforded in the way that we were treated. And I don't think it was, I think it was probably when I was in my early 20s, having just graduated from college and starting out on my first kind of jobs, maybe in between undergrad and grad school, that I started to recognize that there was a difference in the way women were treated in the workplace. And that extends to competitive intelligence as well. The way that women are treated, but also the burdens that women take on, the traditional roles that women have in society, and the traditional roles that men have in society, of late have started to merge, and particularly with some of the generational divides that we see with millennials and wanting more of a work-life balance, wanting more of a meaning in the work that they do. Some of that clear-cut roles have started to change, but it's a slow evolutionary process, and we're not going to get there overnight. That being said, with 50% of women making up the workforce in America, we should make up, or in North America, we should be 50% of the C-suite, and right now we're sitting at 29%. So whether, again, we're talking competitive intelligence or we're talking other industries, that disparity is there, and we need to close that gap. And you do see in different industries that gap is smaller in some and larger in others. What's interesting too is that you do find there are a bulk of women at the entry-level positions and matriculating through the system, but when you get to management, something happens and you find less women in those roles. I have my theories, but I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a change management consultant, so I have my theories, but they haven't necessarily been proven. One of the things that aligns very well to the way that I think about this, and I'm going to pull up this quote here from Bobby Thomason, assistant professor of applied behavioral sciences at Pepperdine Business School. In a strange way, the double standard for women, while unfair, also means they are more likely to be well-rounded leaders. Women have to cultivate both the more traditional male qualities and traditional female qualities. And I think that's a really interesting way to think about this discussion. And when you think about competitive intelligence and where it sits in the world, and it's, you know, it's part marketing, it's part business development, it's part sales, it's part strategy, or largely strategy. And it's a little bit of art and a little bit of science. Competitive intelligence is this merging of various aspects of the corporate world, the same way women tend to be have the traditional male qualities or have to exhibit traditional male qualities and have to exhibit traditional female qualities. It's almost like a perfect mix. And I actually think competitive intelligence is actually a great place for women to land because you can be strategic while also still building community. And I think that's one of the things that we're going to get to in some of the questions. So Michelle, I guess I can turn it over to you now to ask me some of those questions. And sure. I'll leave this quote up in the background because I think it's kind of really telling about some of the conversations we're going to have.
So thank you, Zena. So what just struck me based on what you just said is how women really have to, and this it goes across everything, they take the traditional, they have to develop the traditional male qualities, but also have the traditional female qualities. So it kind of makes them like a conduit. And wouldn't that be just a natural fit for competitive intelligence? Because you're working with all of these different departments, whether they realize they're utilizing CI or not. Marketing,
yeah,
sales,
absolutely.
HR, creative, all of that stuff is based on what, you know, the your customer, your market, all that stuff that CI folks work in. So I never thought about it that way. And I think that's kind of a cool and a unique way to look at it because it makes sense to me.
Yeah, definitely. One of the questions we got was whether or not, you know, was around relationship building and how it's vital to CI. And whoever sent the question and asked, can I speak to how you've seen women do this especially well? And I will say that relationship building certainly has been one of the pinnacles of my success. If I've had any success in the competitive intelligence arena, I think it's around relationship building and recognizing that relationships take time to build the same way information is quick, but intelligence takes time. And it's not transactional, right? Relationships should not necessarily be. Sometimes relationships are transactional. Sometimes
I think that's a component.
Totally. It's like, I want to buy your data. I'm going to buy your data. And that's our transaction. But maybe I want to know who else is buying your data. Or maybe over time, I want to know how else your data is being used by other people. And so a relationship may start with a transaction, but you want to build that relationship to figure out what's next. You know, you want to build a relationship, not necessarily to think about how you're going to use people or what information you can get out of people, but you do want to build relationships because ultimately that's what's going to make your competitive intelligence better than somebody else's. And, you know, there's myriad of information being written or has been written in the academy, but also in less strategic ways about human intelligence and human intelligence collection and where you get that from. And how you can differentiate your information from somebody else's to truly generate intelligence. And that comes from relationships. And that's where I think women really thrive. Women really thrive on building and sustaining long relationships with people.
You know, I wanted to ask you, this is not on our list, but elicitation comes to mind, right? When you're talking about relationship building, I'm wondering if that has any basis to what you're saying at all.
Yeah, I absolutely think so. I think one of the things, men will be far more straightforward. And I actually got accused early on in my career of, quote, communicating like a man, because I tend to be very straightforward. I tended at some point, I've softened over time, but at some point I had not a lot of... And I hate to say the word soften, right? Because I hate to suggest that if you're direct, that you're therefore being hard. But the language that we use and the semantics around that really play a role in this whole gender divide as well.
Yeah.
And when you're eliciting information, you want to listen as much as you ask. And you want to phrase questions in the way that you're going to get the information that you need. And part of that, if we go back to that earlier slide that I showed around compassion and women are traditionally have more compassion, we're wired differently to feel for other people, to be more empathetic. And again, not that that can't be taught and not that we can't encourage our sons as they're growing up to be more empathetic, but we are physically and psychologically wired differently. And so women can be more empathetic. They can listen more. They can find ways to build relationships better. And they can find ways to make connections that when you're thinking about the end goal and you're thinking about being transactional in a relationship, even if it's a, if it's an elicitation relationship, you're like, okay, I'm talking to this person, I'm interviewing this person, and I need to get X information. You're so focused on that X information that you forget to listen to the fact that this is a person in front of you.
Right. Right.
Now, take your time, get to know them. And in getting to know the person, different things will come out in different ways that you can ask different questions and ultimately arrive at that same spot. And it may take you two or three times of interviewing the same person to get to where you needed to get to, but you'll learn a whole bunch of other stuff that you can use that you can use in your mission, whatever your mission happened to be as well.
Okay.
So it's important to not be so linear about these things.
Have a little flexibility, have a little give and take. Everything's not necessarily always black and white.
Totally. And I think that's where women excel, quite frankly.
I don't disagree. I'm going to actually shift gears a little bit and I'm going to ask a question. This actually came from a man. Being less aware of this bias in the CI world, how can I help women thrive in CI roles? So basically, what can I do? I'm a man.
So it's a great question. And there's two things that anybody can do, men, women. Women in the workplace, particularly women who are starting out, they need mentors. And I think that's one that everybody's aware of. You understand that young people, men, women, starting out in their careers need mentors. And we think about mentorship in terms of helping work product. We think about mentorship in terms of helping you understand what a good work product looks like versus a not good work product. We understand it in terms of things like punctuality and maybe language to use in a boardroom. We don't often think of mentorship in terms of things like how you act or how to get your voice heard at the table. We don't think of it in terms of, again, some of those less tangible skills that I think are equally important. So when you're thinking about mentoring a young woman, and I know that there's been lots written around the Me Too movement and how men are afraid to mentor young women because they don't want to be seen alone with a young woman because they don't, you know, it's a scary place for men as well to be out in the world and trying to mentor women. We've become very polarized and it becomes very different. So first of all, I would say park the fear. If you're not doing anything nefarious, there's no reason for you to be fearful. And maybe that's naive of me, but I think more men are genuine than not, and we need to see the good in people. So number one, don't be afraid to mentor young women. Don't be afraid to take young women under your wing and really help them understand how to get ahead by producing better work and bring better value to the table. And so it's about mentoring their professional qualities, mentoring their professional output, while also looking at some of the business acumen and how you can help them build better presentations, how you can help them be more confident in the boardroom, how you can help them take on some of those more traditional male qualities in a way that makes sense for them, right? So that's the other thing, is you want to make sure you're not foisting male qualities or anything that feels uncomfortable on somebody. So if you're not the kind of person who wants to walk into a boardroom and take control, don't make somebody be that person. If you're not the kind of person who is an extrovert, don't turn them into an extrovert because you suggest that that's the only way that they can get ahead. So mentorship is one thing, and we need mentors. We need strong mentors. We need mentors who are not afraid to take chances, mentors who are not afraid to help people legitimately grow in their careers. And mentorship, by the way, is a two-way. It's a two-way communication process whereby the mentee needs to be able to provide feedback too and say, you know what, that was really uncomfortable for me. I really didn't like that. And be able to have that kind of open dialogue. So make sure when you are mentoring a young woman, particularly somebody who's new in their career, who may not feel comfortable demonstrating where they've gone wrong, you want to make it a safe space. So try to be more empathetic and compassionate and reduce that sort of one-way communication where you're telling them what to do, but also give them an opportunity to provide you with feedback or feed forward is another way to think about it. Feed forward is feedback that comes before the action where somebody could say, you know what, I'm not really comfortable doing that. Or I really like the way you told me to do this, but I'm not comfortable with that. So give people the opportunity to have that dialogue. outside of mentorship, which I think is pretty traditional, and we're very aware of how that should work, you want to think about sponsorship. And sponsorship is a little bit different. Sponsorship is where you're saying, I think Michelle has huge potential. I think for Michelle to really grow her potential, she needs to do X, Y, and Z in the workplace. And I'm going to help her find opportunities to do X, Y, and Z while letting somebody else worry about mentoring her. So as the chief marketing officer, I'm going to look for opportunities to put Michelle on an events team. I'm going to look for an opportunity to give Michelle exposure to a public relations problem. I'm going to look for opportunities to give Michelle an opportunity to work on an RFP response, or all kinds of other things that are maybe outside of Michelle's traditional work stream, but will give her an opportunity to shine, give her an opportunity to work on different projects. And by sponsoring her, what you're doing, by sponsoring any person in the workplace, what you're doing is you're giving them an opportunity to stretch and to see if there's something else that they like to do where they can grow and excel. And that's different than mentorship, which is more about mentorship is very tactical, right? It's very like in the moment, how do I make something happen? Whereas sponsorship is thinking longer term and thinking, you know, you're a high performing individual. I want to see you in the C-suite one day. I want to make you grow beyond what you think you're capable of doing. But you can only do that if somebody gives you those opportunities along the way. And they have to be meritous. You're not going to give people opportunities that don't deserve them. But it's like looking for those people and looking for those opportunities. So one of the ways that men can help women in the workplace is by mentoring, but also by providing those sponsorship opportunities. And I think we don't look enough for sponsorship opportunities for women.
Okay. That's actually something I never actually thought about, and it makes perfect sense. You know, mentoring is guidance, tactical, like you said, but sponsoring is opportunity or door opening, if you will.
Yeah, and I often think about it. I mean, my own mentors, if I were to think about it, what's interesting is most of my mentors are men, older men that have gone through things and that I lean on when I have questions about, you know, how to do things, or when I was making a move, for example, from my last role to my current role, and I had to leave a firm that I had been at for many years. There's one particular mentor that I call and I work through things with, but he's not a workplace sponsor for me. Right? Because he doesn't work where I work. He can't give me those opportunities. He can't fabricate those opportunities for me. But he can certainly mentor me through the process and help me understand where my strengths lie to get to the next rung. But he doesn't work where I work. So he can't do that sponsorship thing for me.
It's an interesting idea, an interesting concept. Okay, now I'm going to jump into the whole remote land that we're all living in right now. Obviously, lots of challenges, opportunities. How do you feel about this environment that we are currently in, the remote world, for lack of a better term? Does it present new challenges or opportunities for women and to have more of a voice at the table? Like, is this a jumping off point? Is it kind of like, meh? What do you think, or is it non-existent at all? Like, do you think that this current climate that we're in can be beneficial in that way?
So it's a great question. And I think that it is, like everything, it can be an opportunity and it can also be a significant challenge for women. So we've seen that women tend to be the people on the front lines. So when you think about people who are working in grocery stores, people who are working in as nurses, people who are working in retirement facilities and things like that, they tend to be a lot of women. And so there tend to be a lot of women on the front lines. In competitive intelligence, in the corporate space, I would say that what this remote working situation has done for us is has really leveled the playing field. So getting up to go talk to somebody and having to leave your cubicle or your cube farm and go into their big giant corner office, the scariness inherent in that has been removed. We're a level playing field. We're all boxes on a screen. We're all the Brady Bunch. We're all equal, right? We're all just a box in a Zoom call.
We're all the Brady Bunch. Yep.
Totally. And what's amazing about it is that it's not only has it reduced the playing field, it's also brought us all into each other's homes. It's made life a lot more intimate. You know, you're all hanging out with me in my home office where I have a map of Canada, if anybody's lost. and in that sense, it's become much more intimate. And when you become more intimate, you break down barriers. That ability to have a personal conversation becomes a lot easier. People's kids are showing up in phone calls, people's animals, people's pets. Things that happen in the background happen, and as a result, we become much more human. We've become much more human, I think, in the last 5 months. And those barrier, with those barriers down, you have an opportunity to ask for more. You have an opportunity to say, hey, look, I'm home. I'm not spending an hour and a half commuting to work every day. That's an hour and a half I can give back to you, Mr. Boss or Mrs. Boss, and do more work for you to demonstrate how good I am. It's an hour and a half that you can use in your day or 2 hours or however long your commute was, to do work that you weren't otherwise doing or to speed up a process. It's also hopefully giving people a little bit more time to relax and reflect and be a little bit more introspective, put things in a little bit of perspective in the world and apply that perspective to your work, which means your work becomes better, your work becomes more interesting. And the perspective that you bring to your work, the way you're gonna question data and question information as you're putting it together, becomes more interesting because you just have a bit more time to reflect on things. That being said, biologically, we can't get away from the fact that women also tend to be the ones who are the child carers. They tend to be the ones who care more for the home. And again, this is statistics. This is not my opinion. I'm very lucky to have a partner who probably deals with the children more than I do. But statistically, women tend to take on more of the child care. They also statistically tend to take on more of the house care. And when we're all at home and all of our children are at home, that means that your work product can suffer or that you're more likely to have burnout. So, you know, you do want to put up barriers where you can. You do want to say, okay, some barriers have been broken because we're all in each other's homes and we're a lot more intimate and we can be a little bit more vulnerable with one another. And anyone who's a Brené Bronwyn fan knows that, like, vulnerability is where the creativity happens. So I think that's amazing. But you've also got to balance that with the other stuff that's happening in your life. And
I think balance is the most important part of it. From my perspective, we're virtual. I've been working virtually for however, you know, 7 years or whatever. But it takes getting used to. And I know a lot of my friends who are working from home now, who are moms, who are the house taker care, or, you know, the child care person, they are finally now realizing that they do need to really segment what they're doing.
Yeah.
Because otherwise their heads will explode, which is a least gracious way of what you just said.
And I don't suggest for a minute that men aren't helping.
Oh no. Yes.
But you know, you hear comments, even people who I know are not inherently sexist or inherently think of women any differently, the roles in their homes tend to be that the men are the breadwinners or you know, tend to be the ones who are out working. And so they'll say things like, you know, I'd love to travel once we can get back on an airplane, I'd love to travel. But my wife may kill me because she's been home with the kids all day. Well, you're home too. Right? But you just don't think of the gender roles that way, or we don't entirely. Like I said, I'm in my personal situation is such that I do think my husband actually spends more time with my kids than I do, at least during working hours. But my working hours have stretched now from 8 to 6, whereas previously they would have been, you know, 8 to 5, and then I'd be like, oh, I got to go pick up kids and hop in the car. I don't do that now. So the challenge of working remote is that you can burn out faster, you can take on more, and as a result, burn out faster. But I think the opportunity lies in that you can break barriers. You can work hours that are different than traditional hours if that works for you. And so you can maybe produce better and different work product. And I do think that if you truly have a head for competitive intelligence and you're always thinking two steps ahead, you're always thinking about what the impact of this is on my business in 6 or 8 or 12 months or 24, 36 months, then this is a really unique opportunity to do some scenario planning. This is a really unique opportunity to say, how has this shaken the world? And where is my client, where is my product, where is my company going to be in 24 months, and bring that to bear in a very different way than you would have been able to pre-pandemic. So I do think there's lots of opportunity.
Well, that actually is going to have to be our last question. We are at time. I want to thank you so much for sharing your insight on this topic. I'd love to invite you back to do a part two. Anytime. This is a very, very well-received program. And I'd like to thank you so much for joining us, everybody. And Zena, thank you again. Awesome. Everybody have a great day.
Take care, everyone. Thanks, Michelle. And thank you, Skip.
Stay safe. Bye-bye.